The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you the best for the new year.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
The reigning paradigm of scientific inquiry is known as materialism, the notion that physical material, known as matter, is fundamental in the universe. Materialism assumes that matter produces consciousness and holds that the brain produces consciousness. Therefore, when your brain dies, your consciousness dies. However, there are scientists whose research points out that materialist science seems to overlook the shaky grounds on which its foundation sits. Not only are there logical and philosophical questions about whether a material brain produces consciousness, there are also serious scientific questions about the nature of reality. And these questions will serve as the focus of our dialogue today with our guest, Mark Gober. Mark Gober is a senior member of the Sherpa Technology Group in Silicon Valley, California, a firm that advises technology companies on mergers, acquisitions, and business strategy. He previously worked as an investment banker analyst in New York. Mark graduated magna cum laude from Princeton University and has collected and surveyed a large body of research of various scientific papers and books about consciousness, biological processes, psychic phenomena, near-death experiences, and quantum physics. An overview of this collection of research is contained in his book, An End to Upside-Down Thinking, Dispelling the Myth that the Brain Produces Consciousness and the Implications for Everyday Life. Join us for the next hour as we explore why consciousness is fundamental, non-local, and cannot be explained in terms of brain mechanisms with our guest, Mark Gober. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Mark, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. First of all, in that introduction, it seems like the job that you hold and your education would not indicate that you would be so interested in this field of thought and perception. So tell me, how did you get into this?
Well, I agree with you. On the surface, there isn't much of a relationship. And it was in the summer of 2016, August 2016, is when I first heard a podcast that exposed me to these ideas. I wasn't looking for it. I was listening to health and business podcasts. And a woman came on named Laura Powers, who talked about her psychic abilities and abilities to work with energies and just things I had never heard about in any serious way. And I remember being interested by that conversation. And at the end of the conversation, Laura talked about her own podcast called Healing Powers, where she interviews other people who have had these experiences. So then I listened to Healing Powers. I would listen to it during my drive to work, to and from work. And I became very interested in the fact that there were many people who were independently describing a picture of reality that was totally counter to everything that I was taught. And I got to the point where I couldn't reason that all of them were delusional or lying, or at least I wanted to look into it. And then I started to look at the science, and I got hooked. I spent about a year just doing nothing but researching. When I wasn't in the office, all I wanted to do was research. Because for me, it was a major shift in terms of how I thought about my own identity and reality. So I just wanted to understand it for myself.
So it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland going down the rabbit hole.
Exactly. That's what it was like.
Like really taking you into this whole other realm, so to speak. That was very different from that analytical, you know, materialistic viewpoint that you had come from or that you were even working in.
It was pretty disruptive because I had to rethink everything that I thought I knew. Everything I thought was a certain way, I realized maybe it's not that way. And how have I been living my life up until now? It's been based on that old paradigm. But if there's a new paradigm that of reality that I've always been living in, then how should I be existing in the world?
Right.
What does it mean to be a human being? And that's why I was so drawn to it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that just reminds me, in your book, at some point in your book, and I know that I have this somebody else that I interviewed recently has also spoken about this. So I wanted to read for our listeners something that that really struck me and I think really gets to the heart of how we arrive at a whole new way of thinking, a whole new paradigm, especially like in science. So this is something that I want to read for our listeners, which is about a physicist who was in the 1900s in Britain. Here it is. In April of 1900, the British physicist Lord Kelvin gave a speech to the Royal Science of London, which was at the time the most eminent scientific organization in the world. He stated his discipline had been so successful in unraveling the mysteries of the universe that physics was, for all intents and purposes, complete, except for two small clouds. Now, this is 1900. He said, all right, we got it all figured out. These persistent clouds of anomalies were two unexplained phenomena, which he downplayed as a couple of holes that needed to be filled in before having a complete understanding of the thermodynamic and energy properties of the universe. He dismissed them as non-problems, possibly due to mistaken interpretation of experimental data, or perhaps the problems would eventually be explained after making a few minor adjustments to existing theories. He famously proclaimed that physics was over, except for these two small clouds on the horizon. These clouds turned out to be the clues that led us to quantum theory and relativity theory. And just as Lord Kelvin saw, and this is my comment, just as Lord Kelvin's two clouds could not be explained by minor changes in physics in the 19th century, in the 21st century, what your book really, really grapples with is saying that we are grappling with an adequate explanation for such anomalies in the present materialistic view of the world as precognition and other psychic phenomena. And so I'd love for you to say, Mark, something about what science is going through right now, the possibilities. Here we are, 1900, that's where we were. Are we there again?
I think we are, based on the amount of evidence that we have. When the shift will occur is still a big question, and I don't know when it will be. I decided to write the book because for me it was such a world-changing idea and I wanted to make the information available and also compile the anomalies in one place. I think we have more than two clouds.
Yeah.
We have a lot of clouds. And to put it in one place, I think for someone who is an intellectually honest scientist, it becomes difficult to just sweep it under the rug. When scientists will open up to that and look in the telescope, so to speak, to use the analogy of how certain clergymen in Galileo's era didn't want to look in the telescope, I think we have something similar right now.
So I think one of the scientists that many of us know is Carl Sagan. And before he died, he looked in the telescope and he left us with a question Do you recall that question?
Yes. So this was in his book, The Demon-Haunted World, and it's a skeptical book in general. He was a great scientist, but he acknowledged that were three areas that really intrigued him that were open questions. And it's somewhere deep in the back of the book. And the phenomena relate to the behavior of random number generators that can be affected by the mind. Very, very slight effects, but highly statistically significant, like a small cloud. Telepathy. So examples where people are having a mental influence on someone else's thoughts, apparently, under conditions that are controlled by science. And also children who seem to have memories of a life that is not theirs. And it might be construed as a previous life. So those were things that Sagan even acknowledged as being of interest.
Of interest. You know, last night I was with Ken Pelletier, and we'll be doing an interview with him coming up shortly. And he reminded me of the work of Uri Geller, who was an Israeli psychic, and who was interviewed on New Dimensions many, many years ago. And he reminded me of this experiment that was done at Stanford, where they put Uri Geller in a Faraday isolation, whatever it's called. Anyway, nothing can get in or out.
A Faraday cage.
A Faraday cage. That's it. Thank you. And then they had a bar of titanium in the cage, and that was all, and just Uri there. And they were watching him, and they asked him to then affect this titanium bar, you know. And so he just kind of walked around it. All these scientists were observing him, and he walked around it. And after about a half an hour, the bar broke into two. But it didn't just break. It's like the molecules, it turned out the molecules just sort of separated and just became more dense on the two ends. It was just just mind-boggling for the scientists to see this. And I remember when Uri was on the program, he said, "Do you have something?" And Michael, my partner, gave him the key to our apartment. And he bent the key to the apartment, and we didn't think about it. But when we got home, we couldn't get into our apartment. It was an odd, funny thing. But there it was. That's one of the things that is happening, that you talk about in the book, these different phenomena. So say something about that. What can you tell us?
Sure. Well, two things on Uri Geller in particular that I found really fascinating is that there's been controversy over whether he can actually do the things that he claims he can do. The CIA recently declassified documents that talk about the studies that were run out of the Stanford Research Institute, run by laser physicists. And there's a document that I include in the book from 1973 that talks about Uri Geller and his abilities and being in one of these cages where he was watched and he was able to perform psychically in ways that were unambiguous, to use their term. So this is an internal CIA document that's been declassified. This is an example, I think, of one of many. So the fact that this isn't an isolated case is really significant to me. The fact that that people can achieve these sorts of things where they are influencing physical matter with their mind, where they are able to communicate at a distance, where they are able to perceive at a distance, known as remote viewing or clairvoyance. It's really, to me, the confluence of evidence in these disparate areas, which points to, for me, it's all about consciousness, to a new paradigm of consciousness and its relation to the brain.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about, in a moment, the pyramid of scientific pyramid. I'm here with Mark Gober, and he's the author of An End to Upside Down Thinking. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with Mark Gober. And by the way, he spells his last name G-O-B-E-R, Mark Gober. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, markgober.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. He's the author of An End to Upside Down Thinking, Dispelling the Myth that the Brain Produces Consciousness and the Implications for Everyday Life. Mark, I'd love for you to talk about, like, in the present materialistic scientific paradigm, you show a kind of pyramid with the bottom layer and then the next layer. So how does that look as compared to the one that's related to what you were talking about?
Sure. So these pyramids, I think, are very fundamental to the argument that I'm making. And I actually adapted them from Dr. Dean Radin, who's been looking at these things for over 40 years. And this is kind of what he concludes as well. The mainstream paradigm, which is what I grew up with and what I thought was real, is known as materialism. It says that about 13.8 billion years ago, there was a Big Bang that started the universe, and it filled the universe with physical material that we call matter. So that's the base of our pyramid. The base of reality is matter. Then with this big universe, you have lots of pieces of matter interacting, and we call those interactions chemistry. So the next layer is chemistry. So we started with matter. Now we have a universe that has chemistry. When you have enough random chemical reactions, chance tells us that we're bound to end up with a molecule that can replicate itself. That's like DNA. That leads to biology. We started with matter, then chemistry, now biology. Biology leads to organisms like a human being, which develop brains. So brain comes after biology. And then from the brain comes out consciousness. And when I say consciousness, we've spoken about this word a few times. It's a difficult one to define, but it's the way I think about it is it's our subjective inner experience of being alive. So when I say I am speaking to you, that I, that awareness that is not a tangible thing, that's what I mean by consciousness. And it's something that you and I have, and anyone listening to this conversation, we all have a consciousness. So it's there. And this materialistic perspective, which starts with matter, says that matter creates consciousness through a brain. That's the conventional perspective, which I and many others are challenging.
So that when the brain dies, consciousness dies. It doesn't survive death, so to speak. It's just something contained within the human organism.
Exactly. And that has major implications for thinking about life. And I used to think that way, that consciousness comes from the brain, even though I wouldn't have asked that question. I thought it was just such a foregone conclusion that there's complex stuff happening in my skull, chemical reactions, and that's what's producing my awareness right now. I never thought to question it. So if you take the logic out, when the brain stops functioning, when those chemical reactions stop happening, then there is no consciousness anymore. The memories are gone, feelings are gone, emotions are gone. So is there any meaning in life? To me, the materialist perspective implies that there is no meaning at all beyond trying to rationalize. And that's how I used to think. I accepted that as the reality. Life doesn't have meaning, and I have to deal with it. And that's what our current paradigm is teaching.
And you collect more and more material goods to make you happy, so to speak.
What more can you do?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you have a limited time here. One life, live it in this short amount of time. So it does kind of imply a sense of separation that I have a consciousness and so do you because we're separate organisms. They're not connected to each other. And there is a finite period during which that consciousness will exist.
Now, if you change that paradigm, what would it look like?
And this is why the book is called An End to Upside Down Thinking. The pyramid that I described with materialism starts with matter at the base and consciousness at the very end. What I describe in the book is a paradigm in which consciousness is at the base. We leave everything else, physical matter, chemistry, biology, and even brains, but those all occur within consciousness. It is a flip of the prevailing paradigm at the most fundamental level.
So there's a quote that I use a lot now ever since reading your book, and I repeat this quote a lot. And this is from a very, very well-respected and famous physicist, Max Planck. And in 1931, he says, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. Now, it's just amazing to me that here this famous physicist says this, and then there are so many other scientists that just, they don't even look at that. They don't even regard that. And then when you take something like, let's say, near-death experience, where the brain, where they show that the brain actually shows that it's not functioning. There's nothing, there's no whatever EKGs or whatever it is on the brain. They're showing no activity. And yet these people come back and report enormous happenings. So what is that?
It's an important example, and there's a whole chapter devoted to near-death experiences because, like you say, what happens is that people report lucid memories during a time of extreme physiological trauma. And by that, I mean things like cardiac arrest, clinical death. The heart stops beating. There's no blood flowing to the brain. And yet a number of people, many people, report lucid memories during that time. There are studies even done by cardiologists. For example, Dr. Pim van Lommel, who has a famous study that was published in The Lancet, a well-respected medical journal, in which he looked at people or spoke with people who survived cardiac arrest. And the number of those people who can be resuscitated is on the rise these days because our medical technology is improving and we have more and more of these cases. But conventional materialistic thinking would say, how could there be a conscious memory, let alone something that seems ultra-real, which is what the people describe, during a time in which the conditions of the physical body that you think would be needed for that are abolished. There's no functioning in the brain, and yet there's a lucid memory.
And some of these people can even report conversations happening in the surgical amphitheater. They're reporting all sorts of things that they know happened and occurred, and which reminds me of another idea, this one was new to me when I read your book. I hadn't thought about this one before. It has to do with the function of the brain. The brain is being a kind of filter that keeps us from seeing the full spectrum of things. But when that filter is released, let's say through psychedelics or through this near death, then we have access to something else. Can you please describe that to me?
This is a really important point. I'm glad you raised it. It gets to the question of how is it that the brain is related to consciousness? Because we know there's a relationship. If someone gets in a car accident and has brain damage, we might see that person has memory loss. So we can see, look, you change the brain, you change the consciousness. Another example, you stimulate part of the brain, that let's say the part of the brain responsible for vision, that person might have a corresponding change in vision. So we know there's this very strong correlation between what happens to our brain and the type of conscious experience that we have. And because of that correlation, there has been an assumption that, oh, well, the brain is just producing consciousness. Now, why is that not sufficient, at least logically? And then we'll get into the science. Logically, it's not sufficient because we know correlation does not imply causation. Now, what's an example of that? Dr. Bernardo Kastrup, who I mentioned a number of times in the book, gives a really simple analogy.
Spell his name for people so they might look it up.
Yeah, Dr. Bernardo, last name Kastrup, K-A-S-T-R-U-P, an amazing philosopher in this area. He says, imagine you have a fire and lots of firefighters show up. You have a larger fire, more firefighters. Very strong correlation between the size of the fire and the number of firefighters that appear. Do we conclude that the firefighters caused the fire?
I think that's just a brilliant, brilliant analogy.
It's brilliant.
And that's what we think about with the brain. We say, oh, well, brain causes consciousness. And so you're saying, wait, the cause of consciousness may not correlate here.
Right. So it might be that there's an alternative explanation to explain this correlation. And what might that be? Because we know there's a relationship. And it might be along the lines of what you mentioned, and I have a whole chapter on this in the book as well, which is to view the brain as being like a filtering mechanism for consciousness. And an analogy to simplify it is to say, imagine consciousness is like the sun, and our thoughts and the things that kind of block our pure consciousness are clouds. our brain is kind of like a clouding mechanism. And when the brain becomes less functional, it's like the clouds go away and there's more consciousness experienced. The near-death experience is a great example of that, where people report these ultra-real experiences during a time in which there is almost no brain functioning and sometimes no brain functioning at all. It's like the brain is actually blocking our pure consciousness and limiting it rather than producing it.
That's just so brilliant. And people can really get into that analogy because we can think of getting in an airplane and it's all overcast and raining when the airplane takes off. And that's like the way our brain works in everyday, in our seeming everyday reality.
Absolutely.
On a relative level. And then it breaks through the clouds and suddenly there is unlimited visuals. You can just see for unlimited amount of time, space, as far as the eye can see. And you're in the light. So that we have an experience of that. We can really relate to that in some way. So that takes me to the idea of consciousness and separation. So that's a big deal, too, that there is no separation. Maybe. Well, let's just help us to understand that concept.
It's a tough one to wrap our heads around. And I think there are limitations that are imposed on us based on our biology. We can only comprehend so much, like the concept of infinity. We all accept that as being a real thing, but we can't really grapple with it. We can't explain it very well. And I think that might be what's happening here with the picture of reality that I think is likely to be real, which is that not only is consciousness not produced by the brain, but in fact, consciousness is the basis of reality and that we're all connected as part of the same stream of consciousness, so to speak. So to return to Dr. Bernardo Kastrup again, he has an analogy which says, imagine that reality is like a stream of water where water represents consciousness. And each of us is like a whirlpool within that stream, meaning we're all made of consciousness, but we have these kind of artificial delineations that separate us. So it seems like we're separate. And maybe that's like our brain-body mechanism. It gives us only a limited lens into the reality, but fundamentally we are interconnected.
Yeah, that one is tough because I see you as a separate being. With my eyes, I could reach out and touch you and say, oh, well, we're really separate. But going back to the idea that if consciousness is fundamental and matter is derived of consciousness, the idea that, well, here's another complex one, that we make up matter by our consciousness. I'm not saying that very eloquently, but we'll get into that in just one moment if we can. I'm here with Mark Gober, and we're talking about the end of upside-down thinking, which is the title of his book. And his website is Mark Gober, G-O-B-E-R, markgober.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Mark Gober, and he is the author of An